Welcome to the Brute Strength Podcast, bringing you worldwide experts from all areas of health and fitness. We cover training, nutrition, coaching, and mindset. Welcome your host, strength and conditioning coach, 2012 and 2013 CrossFit Games champ, Michael Cashew. Mind, body, brute.
What's up, guys? Welcome back. My name is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week, I'm back on the show with my man, Sean Pastuch from Active Life RX. Today, we're talking about how to pick the right training program. I know it can be super overwhelming trying to decide which program is right for you. There are a ton of great ones out there, and then there are a ton of ripoffs, a ton of programs that I think are a waste of your time or your money. So we're specifically referencing a guide that we put out a few months ago. I think it's called something like How to Pick the Right Training Program. Imagine that. And you can find that guide by going to brutestrengthtraining.com/pick-your-program. In this show, we dive into a couple of the biggest takeaways from that guide, and we talk about a couple different things that kind of just come off the cusp, especially since I have Sean here with me. Specifically, we talk about mistakes to avoid, misconceptions about programming, training methods that work best, and the four steps you need to take to reach your potential. Couple disclaimers before we get started. Number one is, and I feel a little guilty about this, I didn't emphasize enough that there are a ton of great programs and coaches out there by friends of ours in the sport that we really believe in and trust. We spent the majority of the time kind of giving warnings and things to look out for, like scams and things that we think are a waste of time. But there are definitely a lot of high quality coaches and programs out there that we believe in other than just Brute. So I wanted to say that before you hear us going into the other stuff. And then number two, in the beginning of the show, you'll hear me reference the link. And I said that you can get there by /pick-your-guide. And that is wrong. It's brutestrengthtraining.com/pick-your-program. Now, before we get started, if you've been a longtime listener, or if you're a new listener and you haven't done so already, please head to iTunes, leave me a quick review, let me know what you think. It always keeps me motivated to continue putting all I have into the show. I really appreciate you guys. Now enjoy the show. Sean Pastuch, what's up, man?
How we doing, Michael Cashew?
Doing great, dude. Thanks for making some time to do this with me.
I always got time to do this kind of stuff with you. First of all, I love the sound of my own voice. Second of all, I love that handsome face on the computer screen right now. So anytime.
Yeah, it's a little bit awkward. You can see me and I can't see you. So I'm a little on edge here, but I think we're going to make a great show.
I think so too. Don't worry. I took all my clothes off.
Awesome. Love it. Love it. All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in. The goal for this show is to help you decide what training program is right for you. We created a guide to help you pick the right program. And we're gonna be kind of weaving in and out of different topics that we talk about in the guide. And you can find the guide at brutestrengthtraining.com/pick-your-guide. That's brutestrengthtraining.com/pick-your-guide. I highly recommend looking at that because we go in a lot more detail into the topics that Sean and I are gonna talk about. But on this show, I think this is going to be a great standalone interview because we're going to talk about some things that we don't talk about in the guide specifically. So in general, there are a lot of great options out there. And then there are also a lot that could be a waste of your time and money. So Sean is one of the guys that I respect most in this industry. He's worked with and for and with all of the different programmers and coaches out there. And I think he has a unique perspective. So I'm excited to do this. So initially I wrote the guide 2 years ago. I was actually it was when I was with Bryce in Peru. For those of you listening, that's the best man at my wedding. He was in the ICU at the time. And I had 3 weeks out there to support him and his family. And I also had a lot of time to really just think and create some stuff. And one of the things I did while I was out there is create this guide. But after I created it, I realized, or as I was creating it, I it dawned on me that putting it out into the world would probably piss some people off, because some people are going to fall into categories that we really recommend against, where we don't recommend against any person or team in particular by any means, but we just truly believe that there are better ways to maximize your productivity and your progression and your growth. And so it wasn't until 3 months ago that we actually put it out, because I think it's just it's something that needs to be said and talked about, and no one's been willing to do it to date. So in the introduction and kind of the table of contents of the guide is the following. First is how to avoid the biggest programming mistake, the 5 costly misconceptions about programming, the training methods that work best, 4 mistakes to avoid when choosing a training program, the importance of value and price, and then 4 steps to reaching your potential. So again, we're going to be weaving in and out of topics talked about in the guide, and I highly recommend you go and check it out. So let's start here, Sean. In order to find the program that is right for you, first we have to start with goals, right? We have to, an athlete has to know what he or she wants to know what kind of program is right for him or her. So how do you recommend people determine what their goals are?
That's such a big question, and I'll answer it in the best way that I can on a podcast that has time constraints and context constraints, because I actually think it goes deeper than knowing what their goals are. I think that we need to get into why those are their goals.
Right.
You know, if someone comes in and they're like, hey, I just want to look good naked. It's like, cool. Well, Brute Body might be the best program for you, but mm-hmm. why do you care what you look like naked? You know, and that sounds like such an obvious question. People are like, well, who wouldn't want to look good naked? Well, the guy who wants to win the CrossFit Games might not care how he looks if he wins. So the conversation of why that's your goal, I think, is just as important. So I think that starting with, you know what you want your end result to be. Why is that important to you? Now we can choose the best program for you. Because if you say, hey, I wanted to win the CrossFit Games, and I thought that your compete program or your games prep program, for example, would get me that, but I don't have the 6-pack that I was looking for. First of all, unlikely. It's probably going to happen. But the answer to that is simple. It's, well, this is not an aesthetically driven program. If that's what you really wanted, you should have gone with the program whose first priority is getting you the aesthetic result. Mm-hmm. So that's where I would start.
I couldn't agree more. I think to take that even a step further, one of the things that Adi has really shown a light on for me is identifying the process that it takes to reach a certain goal. Like, a lot of people say they want to make it to regionals, or they say they want to make it to the games, but they really have no idea what that entails, right? They think all it is finding the right program and following what it says on the program. But we know now, I mean, there were close to 500,000 people entered the Open this year. It's an incredibly competitive field. And the days of just showing up to the gym and working hard are no longer. Like, you have to be dialing in every single area of your fitness. So if you're not willing to sleep 8 to 9 hours a day, if you're not willing to recover properly, if you're not willing to do a program that allows you to develop skills over a long period of time, then you really don't, you're not committed to that goal. I don't believe you have what it takes to reach that kind of goal. And there are definitely exceptions. You know, there are athletes, like very high level athletes that come from other sports that have a really, you know, high training age, and they have a lot of preparation, and they might be able to get away with stuff that others can't. There are certainly exceptions to that rule. But in general, people have to start treating themselves like professionals. So I definitely recommend identifying the process, really laying out what it will take to reach that goal, and then deciding, okay, is this still my goal?
Well, right? Can I jump in on that with you? So yep. I think that that's important, but I think that the biggest problem that most people who are going to listen to this are going to have is that they don't know the process that they need to get the result that they want. If they did,
right,
they wouldn't be seeking it from somebody else. So what I always recommend to athletes who we work with, athletes or coaches, whatever we're doing, it's here are the steps that we're going to take. At this point in the year, you can expect to be able to do this, but not this. At this right. point in the year, you can expect to do this, but not that. Then we look at what point in the year we're at and we audit. Are we actually hitting the results that we said we were going to hit? If we are, trust the process. If we're not, the process has to pivot because it's not working. So an example of that would be Lindy Barber. When we started working with her as an athlete, she came on board and we said, listen, I'll work with you, but you're not going to be Lindy Barber in the Open. This is 2 years ago. She had really bad knee tendonitis. And I said, you're not going to be Lindy Barber in the Open. Like, I don't even expect you to qualify for regionals because I'm not going to let you do any kind of cyclic work right now. It's the worst thing in the world for your tendon. That right. means no air squats, no squat cleans, no snatches, no running, no biking, no rowing. It's like, what the fuck? What am I going to do then? Well, the programming from now until February is going to be geared around building tendon durability. And that's it. I don't care about anything else.
Right.
Because if you can't squat, you can't do anything anyway. So then I said, you'll have enough engine left over to be fine in the Open. Your team will still make the regionals. You have Rich Froning on it. You have, you know,
who?
Rich Froning. Richard, yeah. Richard Froning.
Oh, Richard. Richard.
Yeah. Yeah. So they were going to make regionals. That was going to happen. You know what I mean? And even if she wasn't the next person, they're sending two teams this year to the games. There was somebody else who could score for them. I said, by regionals, you're going to be fit. By the games, you're going to be the healthiest and fittest person on your team. But you need to be willing to go on that ride with me. If you're not, then we shouldn't start.
Right.
And she was like, no, I'm good with that. Let's do it. I had to teach her how to communicate with her teammates that, hey, I'm not going to do 1,000 wall balls for time as a team without the ball dropping. Like, it's just not a smart workout for me.
Right, right.
Like that workout literally came up. They posted it on What's Rich Doing. It was like, hey, we're about to do 1,000 wall balls for time as a team. The ball's not going to touch the ground. And I saw that. I texted Lindy and I was like, not you. And she's like, no, I already told them I can't do that.
That's hilarious. I never heard of that. Yeah. That doesn't surprise me. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great example. And it really just takes, and we're going to talk more about this throughout the show. It takes you putting your ego aside. And that's just such a hard thing to do in this culture, which is, you know, everything is for time and every, like, you have to be competing every second of every day. It makes it really hard to say, you know, I'm not going to be the best prepared for the Open right now or for competition right now with the end goal of being the best athlete that I can possibly be.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And that's something that it's really hard, especially in this sport, because the competition is never played slow. It's not like baseball, football, basketball, lacrosse, where there's moments in the game where you're jogging or walking right. or standing still. In CrossFit, if you're going, you're going 100%. So it's difficult for the athletes who compete in this sport to understand why that's not a valuable thing to be doing mm-hmm. in the end of August.
Right. Yeah. One more thing on that why thing that you brought up. Ask yourself why it's your goal in terms of, is it your goal or is it someone else's goal? Right. Do you want to make it to regionals because, you know, it's something that everyone in your gym values and everyone thinks is cool and you think it'll bring you some notoriety or some admiration? Or is it something that you just feel like you deeply, deeply desire and are committed to? You know, if it's something that you're doing for others and you have this notion that maybe you just want to be fitter for life, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And I think, you know, there are maybe more people than not that need to reevaluate their goals kind of as such, right? Most people are probably better off just trying to be fitter for life and will actually be fitter overall if they stop focusing on that outcome of making it to regionals and being so hard on themselves and putting so much pressure on themselves. but I think people cause themselves a lot of angst and just heartache because their goals are not aligned properly.
Yeah, the first thing I do when I talk to an athlete who's going to go through what we do is I try to talk them out of working with us. Because if I can talk them out of doing it, then they're not going to be able to endure what it takes to be successful.
Right.
So, and I'll tell them when I'm done, like, listen, the reason I talked to you that way is because I didn't want to start with you and have you fail. Mm-hmm. You need to go back to the drawing board and figure out why you want to do this if you're going to be taken on by us.
Look, you're Tyler Durden in Fight Club talking to Big Bob. You're too fat. Get off my porch.
It's been a while since I saw that movie, but I'll take it.
So one of the top five most common misconceptions when picking a program is that the program with the best athletes using it is the best program. What do you think of that?
I think that's a huge misconception. I think that if you look at the best athletes, especially in this sport, they're making it every year, regardless of who their coach is. You know, if you just take Sarah Sigmund's daughter as an example, she was working with one person when she was in Europe the first time. She was working with a different group when she was in Tennessee. Now she's working with somebody else and she's back in Europe. She made it all three times. None of those coaches got Sarah Sigmund's daughter to the CrossFit Games. Sarah Sigmund's daughter got herself there. The role of the coach in that situation is to give her the best opportunity to be healthy and perform at her best when she arrives and to be in the best mind space so that she can do those things. I think that the best athletes don't necessarily know any better for themselves what they need than the person who just started. It's just a different playing field for decisions.
Right.
You know, because now it's actually for a lot of them a marketing game. You know, which coach marketed to me the best? That's who I'm going to go to. It's like a recruiting trip to college if coaches are coming after them. Sometimes it goes the other way and they go to the coach and they want to know if the coach would work with them. And I think that typically is going to be the best way for things to happen or when they get a recommendation from their friend. Mm-hmm. But it still doesn't mean that it's the best coach or the best coach for them because the friend making the recommendation might not know what they don't know. They might not know what that friend needs from a coach that they don't need. You know, so maybe the coach doesn't give you a lot of attention, but you're an athlete who thrives on very, very simple instructions. Go do this. Got a coach. I'll run right through that wall. Where your friend needs the coach to tell you, I need you to run through that wall, but I want you to lead with your left shoulder. And here's why. I want you to spring forward right before you get to the wall. That's going to give you the max acceleration and put you through whatever. Some athletes need that level of detail in order to follow marching orders without a problem. And what I see happening all the time, I talk to athletes from various different groups, not just brute athletes, who are like, yeah, I don't know if my coach really knows what he's doing for me, but the last thing I want to have him do is not trust me. I don't want to question him or her. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, if your coach would give you a hard time for questioning him or her in a respectful way, then you don't have a coach, you have a dictator. You know, and I happen to know a lot of these coaches, and I think that most of them would want to be questioned. At least the better ones would.
Right.
But athletes don't understand that.
Look, and now you slipped just elegantly into Nick Saban, right? You're talking recruiting, you're talking football plays. I like how you do that, just seamlessly.
Yeah, well, I think Nick Saban is 95% not full of shit, 5% full of shit.
Totally, man.
Like if you expect me to believe for one second that he doesn't tell his guys, we're going to win a national championship, then we can end this show right now. The idea that we're just going to develop a process that's going to create a national championship, then don't be pissed if you don't win. If you have the process, that's all you really care about.
Right.
But you have to know you want to win.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. I wonder if right when he got to Bama, he said it the first couple of years and then it just became like part of the culture and that was understood that that was the end goal. But I've talked to enough people that have worked with him that have corroborated that. So that could either be they're just all, you know, his disciples and buy his bullshit, or they actually don't talk about winning a championship.
Or it could be that he doesn't, but everybody else does.
Right.
You know, like when you show up for a recruiting trip and you put a hand with five rings on it on the table, you're saying you're coming here to win.
Right. Do you think that, so social proof is such a powerful psychological construct. So social proof, guys, is the, I don't know, psychological phenomenon where we see, when we see something that other people like, other people are raving about, we just assume it's valuable, right? Which is why Yelp is so popular. We look at how many reviews and what the rating is, and then we choose based on that rather than, you know, doing our own research or sometimes even looking at the menu if it's even something that we might like. So knowing that, Sean, is there any way to navigate this issue of, you know, we see the top athletes on a program or we see a bunch of our friends on the program, how can they deal with that effect of social proof and still make a good decision?
So I want to make sure I understand your question. You're saying I'm Johnny from Michigan and I'm on Instagram and I see that Jacob Heppner does Brute. I'm trying to decide what program I want to be on. I think Jacob Heppner is really cool. I guess I'll do Brute, but maybe it's not the right program for him or whichever program he's looking at. How does he make an objective decision for himself?
Exactly.
I think that really good companies will have the interaction with you where if you get on an email with them or you get on a call with them and you say, hey, this is the kind of process that I'm looking for, or this is the kind of result that I'm looking for. Do you have the process for it? Mm-hmm. That company will go back and forth with you enough to give you the information necessary to determine if you're the right client for them and to determine if they think that they're the right company for you. So what I mean by that is I can only speak for us, and I know I can speak for Brute because I know what we do in both companies from a customer service perspective. If somebody sends an email and says, hey, I'm thinking about joining with you, how does it work? We tell them there's someone to talk to. There is a person on the other side. It's not just automation after automation after automation. If right. somebody comes and says, hey, I want to win the CrossFit Games. My budget's $135 to be on a program. Can I do it with you? Maybe not. You know, we might right. not be the best service for you because what we deliver is, quite frankly, much more valuable than $135 a month. And we won't sacrifice on our quality to better fit your budget. We prefer you right. change your life to better reflect the goals that you actually want to hit. And what I do in my emails, if someone objects to joining with us or is the wrong kind of candidate, I literally will send them 3 recommendations of people who would be quote unquote my competitors.
Right.
You know, here's the contact person at the following 3 companies. Mm-hmm. I think they might be able to help you better than us.
That's a great answer. Another one of the most common misconceptions is that, I don't know if we should do random shit, but there's this idea that we shouldn't periodize training for CrossFit competitors. And I completely understand this when it comes to general fitness, general physical preparedness for the general population. I just so firmly believe in the, you know, the foundational CrossFit methodology, but I'm not sure it's the same for competitors.
I don't even think that that's the best case scenario for the Gen Pop. You know, periodization is in place because it works.
Can you define it, periodization?
Yes. So for people who aren't sure what we're talking about, it's the idea that we start at a base and we build upon that base. So every week, every month becomes a little bit more progressively difficult, if you will. There's more load, there's more intensity, there's more volume, there's more frequency, whatever it might be. We're building to a crescendo. The idea is to get really, really high up on the CNS load, deload, and then peak. Typically, that's how something like that would work for oversimplification purposes. It's doing more of the same thing in less time or with more weight that you were doing it previously because now you have the capacity to. Was that a definition that you're good with?
Yep.
Okay. So the reason why I believe that even for general population, that's the best thing to do is because that's what science has shown. Random shit gets random results. And the reason why sometimes a randomly designed program that's not a linearly periodized program works better for the general population is because they're not really there to get fit. They're there to do things that fit people can do. and they don't need to reach the elite level of fitness that a competitor does to do those things. So they're more likely to stay on the program that is not linearly progressed, because it could be more fun. It could be more interesting. You're not doing the same thing week after week after week. It's not cut, paste, progress.
Right.
You know? So CrossFit, the idea of CrossFit is constantly varied, high-intensity functional movement, right? Well, I don't think that's the best thing in the world for people. Not even to compete in CrossFit. If it's constantly varied but high intensity, how are they going to be effective when the intensity can't be high?
Right.
And tendons don't respond well to constant high intensity. We have 2 to 3 months a year when we work with athletes where we don't care about their intensity. All we're looking to do is build durability through their tendons so that when the need for high intensity comes, they're prepared for it. They're not the athlete who is now having to find ways to mask tendon pain to get through the high intensity workouts.
Right.
So to me, progressive periodization is the best thing that anybody can be doing from a results perspective, provided that they have the discipline to stay on the program. It's only not the best thing if you're not disciplined enough to stay on a program. The reason why that would be the case is because your goals aren't in line with the discipline required to stay on a program.
Right. And it definitely, like, there is a place for, like, just knowing yourself. And if you basically discover that you're not willing to adhere to a program that's periodized, then that's the case. But you might have to be okay with slower results, or you might have to be okay with more frequent injuries, or whatever the case may be. Yeah. And one other thing, you said, you know, this is what the research is showing. And I can hear some of the naysayers say, well, the research is 20, 30 years behind. And I wouldn't necessarily disagree with that. But what we're also seeing is that periodization is being used in every single other professional sport, right? MLB, NFL, NBA, all of the best strength and conditioning coaches in history are using some form of periodization, whether that be linear or undulated, that plays a role in their progression.
Well, the argument could be made that there's a political game to get to those jobs and that those are not the best trainers out there. So there's always a counter argument to the conversation that this is what's being done at the highest level. It's just that if you look at anything in the world, like, we don't picture having a kid and periodizing our tolerance for their misbehavior. We don't look at it that way. But what happens is the first time that your kid flips out, you're like, well, what the fuck do I do with this? And then you build a coping mechanism, essentially, to stay calm in the moment so that the next time that happens, you better manage the situation. But then next time your kid doesn't flip out by, like, dropping their food on the floor, they throw their body on the floor and they start squirming around and screaming. And you're like, what the fuck do I do about this now? And then you have to figure out how to do that again. And then over time, if you intentionally make the changes, it doesn't matter what your kid does. You're prepared. You have the capacity to deal with the load that is your kid's temper tantrum. It's life. Like, you don't go into a new job and have them give you the highest order of operations for things to do to start. You know, they start you with the basics.
Right. I'm just picturing you doing, like, 3, 2, 1, change shitty diaper, step on toys that kid dropped.
There are no toys in the space where I change diapers. That is set up in advance.
Right. So, this is the last common problem that I'll talk about, and then we'll go on to some, like, different programming options. But another huge one is that the best athletes make the best coaches and programmers. Like, almost every single top level, especially male athlete in the sport, has their own programming that they're selling. What do you think of this?
I don't blame the athletes for putting the programming out there and trying to grab attention, notoriety, and money with their fame. I don't blame them for trying to do that, but I don't want to do what the best athlete in the world is doing. I'm not the best athlete in the world. I haven't reached the level of capacity that they have to endure the volume that they're on, to endure the intensity that they're on. And I believe that when you're a great athlete, all of your energy has to be focused on how to become a better athlete. What do I have to do today to be more present in the moment, to know if I need to pivot from what I'm doing so that I can be a better athlete? How do I get better timing on my kip? You know, how do I point my toes in a better position to be more aerodynamic, whatever, on my muscle up, you know? Mm-hmm. The coach has to be doing the exact same thing from the other perspective. How do I best program this? How do I best communicate this with the client? How do I best tell a client, hey, the last 4 months, I don't think we were actually doing the best thing for you because you're not getting the results that I wanted. We're going to change it up and maintain your credibility. Those are the things to me that make a great coach. And a great athlete is not practicing those things as much as a great coach is while they're being a great athlete.
Right. How can they?
They can't. They shouldn't.
How would they have the time for that?
They shouldn't. And I get shit for this all the time, but I'll talk to, I work with some athletes who I mentor without writing them any programming. And with a lot of them, what I end up actually doing for them is helping them set up a business for themselves so that they can get paid more in less time so they can afford to train the way that they need to train. So a lot of the athletes we work with are coaches in a CrossFit gym. And they're like, I want to be a great coach. I want to do this. I want to do that. I'm like, that's great. You can be. But if you're coaching the 5 a.m. class and sometimes the 8 p.m. class, you're not living like the athletes who are trying to eat your lunch. So we have to create an environment for you where you don't need the money from the 5 p.m. and the 8 p.m. class in order to live so that you can go to bed by 9:30. You're still welcome to wake up and coach the 5 a.m. class, maybe going to bed at 8:30 if you're doing that. But now the rest of your day is set for you to train. You know, it's what is really the low-hanging fruit for you? And for some of these athletes, it's just, I don't make enough money to do what you're talking about, so I have to coach. And if I'm going to coach, I want to be good at it. And it's like, well, cool, but then be comfortable with not being a great athlete. And I get shit for it because I tell people they got to choose. Are you the best coach in the room or the best athlete in the room? And I don't think you can be both.
Another big one that gets me, and I think this is the biggest issue with just going with your favorite athlete, you know, using their programming. So the problem is that you don't get the same skill, strength, or capacity development that athlete got as they were developing. So let's take someone that might have been like a really high level gymnast before they got into CrossFit, and now they sell their own training. That individual will have had thousands and thousands of hours of fundamental gymnastics. And I think gymnastics is one of the best examples because the skill acquisition takes the longest, right? It's just so technical and it just takes so much practice to develop that kind of neurological capacity. Now, if you just start doing what they're doing at the current time while they're competing in the games, you're missing all of that fundamental gymnastics that they got over the years of turning into a top level gymnast. So you're essentially not going to get to develop those skills. You're going to be doing very high volume gymnastics. And in the end, you're not going to develop nearly as much as they did. And you're never going to reach your full potential. Strength and endurance capacity are absolutely just as big of a factor.
Yeah, and you're probably going to become my client when you break down.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I saw somebody in the Brute group on Facebook the other day who was like, hey, I don't have time for the two-a-days because my work is so far away. So I've been jamming them into one session. What do you guys think of that? Is that cool? So I wrote, two-a-days in one session is the fastest way to be all-a-days with one of my coaches. And frankly, as much as we love working with people, we want to work with people who are capable of staying on their program while we work with them. If you're jamming two-a-day workouts into 1 3-hour session, you are on your way to being too hurt to continuing to do what you do.
Yeah, and that goes back to identifying that process, right? Like if you want to become a top level athlete and your program requires 2 or 3 training sessions a day, but you just don't have time to do that, then it might not be the right goal for you.
Well, either that, or you need to really audit your life and say, okay, I want to be a top level athlete. is that more important to me than having my own place? Right. Am I cool with getting in a house with three or four other dudes or women and roughing it for a little bit so that I can pursue this athletic career? You know, in business, it's, I hear people all the time who are like, oh, I can't afford that. I could never afford a media guy to do this stuff for me. I could never afford an assistant. So I can't do that. And I'm like, no, no, no. It's not that you can't afford it. It's that you haven't thought about what you would need to do to get them. Mm-hmm. And it means sacrificing other things. And in business, it's making more money. In the gym, it's changing your life so that you can do what you need to do. If you want to be an elite athlete, treat yourself like one.
Let's talk about some different types of training programs out there. So we kind of came up with our own names for these, but all of you will be able to relate to this. So the first one is Metcon Mania. This is the type of program where it's just Metcons all day, every day. You know, these are probably the most fun programs out there. You just get to play and do CrossFit workouts over and over and over and over and over.
It's emotional programming.
It's definitely emotional programming. What effect does this method have on people?
They're going to grind themselves into the ground. You know, the thing that CrossFitters don't understand, like we discussed a little bit earlier, on a large scale, and I believe that it starts at the top, and unfortunately, like it starts with the definition of CrossFit, is high intensity all the time. That is a bad idea. And it's how you're going to break down your joints, your muscles are going to start to break down, your tendons are going to start to break down, and your CNS is going to break down. Central nervous system is what CNS stands for. It's just a really good way to get really, really good and fast results that you don't get to keep. It's kind of like driving your car on red line all the time.
I think a huge reason why people tend to go to this, and I think you already started to hint at this, is that they just lack mental toughness, right? They think that they think the opposite. They think that they're really working hard because they're doing so many quote unquote high intensity Metcons, but it's really that they lack the mental toughness to slow things down and really commit to a long-term process. These are the same people that, like, they just have to, if they don't improve in the open this year, then they're not successful, right? They don't understand that becoming a great athlete can sometimes take years.
Well, mental toughness, and I have to have this conversation with every athlete who we take on, especially the elite athlete, because I think that people's idea of mental toughness is backwards. You know, if I tell you, for example, you know, I want you to grind out that workout. I just want you to go as hard as you possibly can. If you're a CrossFitter listening to this, you're like, all right, it's going to be hard, but I'm mentally tough. I can stick it out. I'll get through that workout. If I say to you, hey, I want you to take a week out of the gym and just work on your mental game. Like, I just want you to journal. I want you to go on walks. I want you to meditate. I want you to call friends who you've done wrong and apologize to them. That's what I want you to do this week, because it's going to make you a better person. That will make you a better athlete. That's really hard. And a lot of athletes are like, there's no way I would ever be able to do that. I'm like, well, that's mental toughness. Going in and doing what you love to do in a really intense way is not mentally difficult. It is easy. It's the default.
The next one is weightlifting and or powerlifting plus. I don't know if people are still doing this, but a couple of years ago, I know this was huge. People would say, Mike, I'm thinking about just doing weightlifting a while, and I'll just do like a Metcon here or there, and then I'll get into competing. I think this is an ass backward approach. there's just so many skills that you have to develop. And at the end of the day, to make it past the open, you have to have a crazy level of endurance right now. So you can get way stronger, but if your engine is not where it needs to be, then you have no shot at making it out of the open.
Yeah, if we're talking about CrossFit athletes, then I think that that's a great way to get really strong and keep your skills at baseline.
Right.
But it's not going to be a great way for you to develop skills while you get strong. And the thing is, and you talked about this a moment ago when you talked about just improving in the open but not getting where you want to go every year. You're not going to get as strong as fast on a well-rounded CrossFit program. But if you want to be an effectively competitive CrossFitter, you can't focus on one area. you have to make sure everything is moving up, because skills do go away. And it does take time for those skills to come back. And you don't have that time. You know, if you're powerlifting for 6 months and then you're like, all right, I'm gonna get back into muscle ups, your muscle up endurance is not gonna be there. Your technique, your timing is going to be off. And if you wanna compete at a really high level, that 1% is extremely important.
The next one is program papier-mâché. So this is where you look at 5 to 10 different free blogs out there and you create your own program papier-mâché. You do whatever you think in the moment your weaknesses are. And what usually happens is you end up doing a lot of what feels comfortable or what is not too difficult. And again, this is maybe even worse than weightlifting plus, because you're not even working consistently towards any goal. What do you think of this one?
What that one is to me is it's the want over will. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is I really want to be great. And I want to take the weightlifting from here and the gymnastics from here and the Metcons from here and the recovery from here and put them together, because I think that'll work well for me. But you're not willing to do what it really takes to get where you really want to go, which is get a coach who understands what you need and has a team of coaches around them to understand what they need. And you just have to be real with yourself. Why aren't you buying the program? Why aren't you buying the coach? I'm not buying the coach because I can't afford the coach. What else are you buying that you don't have to have, where if you didn't buy that, you could afford the coach? Okay, you value those things over your competitive result. Deal with it. It's the truth. When you get there, then you're able to tell yourself, okay, I don't really want to be a competitive athlete, so I don't need to papier-mâché 5 fucking blogs. Or you can say, no, I do want to be a competitive athlete. I'm done with those other things that cost me all this money. I'm going to get myself the coach that I need.
Boom. Vintage Sean Pastuch right there. Deal with it.
Well, it's an empathetic deal with it, because the thing is, people out there are like, no, I can't afford it. You don't understand. Like, you're being so mean. Why can't you just be nice? The mean is the person who bullshits you into thinking that that's actually going to work and leads you down a 3 to 5 year path of nothingness.
Right.
I'm saving you the time. I'm saving you the mental energy, the money that you could have made getting a job, giving up your competitive pursuit that you don't really want.
Amen. So finally, we get to the comprehensive training program. A comprehensive training program is something that is well thought out. It's something that involves research-backed methods, as well as some level of periodization and a long-term approach, right? It's a program that takes into account the entire training year and realizes that it's probably unrealistic that we're going to maintain and our highest level of fitness year round. It's something that progresses in nature and allows for skill development and gymnastics, weightlifting, as well as progresses you appropriately in endurance. And so there are a couple different types of comprehensive training programs. There are a lot of what I would call cookie cutter programs out there that are actually phenomenal programs. This is the type of program that's built for, you know, with one person in mind. That it might be one person writing it. It might even be a whole team of people writing this program, but it's written for a specific individual. What do you think about these, Sean?
I think they're good if your goal is to be competitive. You know, it really comes down, and I don't mean a competitive, like I'm going to do well in the open. I mean, like, if you want to really see how fit you can be, that's what you have to do. But those programs at the same time are going to be really mentally draining for the person who doesn't really want to be that level of an athlete. In other words, I personally don't follow any kind of a periodized, thought out program. I go into my garage and I do what I feel like doing. I make sure that I sprint at least once a week, and I make sure that I bench, because ladies love a big bench press. Let's be real.
But it's really been paying off for you too. You've got a pretty large chest these days.
I'm working it through. But the point is that the best program for me to be on to become a really fit individual? No, it's not. But if I was on a program with one of your one-on-one coaches, I would be like, I don't have 3 hours a day or 2 hours a day to pursue this objective. And for me, they could say, look, we'll do 1 hour a day for you. That's not a big deal. We can scale that down. Your goals don't have to be to compete to work with us one-on-one. But I don't care enough about my individual fitness right now to be accountable to somebody else for what I'm doing every day. I just don't. I'd rather put that money into something else, like someone to cook my meals.
Right.
You know, so, or buy my kids something like a bouncy house and then figure out how to jerry rig some kind of a roof to go on it so they don't burn themselves. You know, that's where my money is going these days. But if you're somebody who wants to get the maximum results from the time that you spend working out, to me, that's your only choice.
Yeah, I think there are actually quite a few free programs out there that I think are very comprehensive programs that if money truly is an issue and you really just can't afford to have like an individualized approach or a customizable approach, I think they're great options. But you have to think about it in the same way as like the current American education system, right?
Slippery slope, bro.
What might be the absolute best way to teach one kid might be the absolute worst to teach another, right? One kid might love just plain old lectures and reading out of textbooks and having the structure that is the American education system. But then there's a lot of other people, and I was one of them, that really got very little out of that education system. I like to move around. I like to be interactive, and I can't stand sitting still for a very long period of time. I'm very good at figuring out games and learning how to game a system, but that led to me really not retaining hardly anything, you know, from my early education days.
Yeah, that sounds extremely familiar.
It's the same type of thing, right? What might be a perfect program for an elite athlete might be a terrible program for you. So just consider that when you're considering doing one of those types of programs.
Yeah, the program that you're on, really simple. Here's the, for me, the really simple in a can, how you decide. The program that you're on, when you wake up in the morning, you should be like, awesome, I can't wait to work out today. If the program that you're on doesn't make you feel that way, you're on the wrong program. And if you're a competitive athlete and you're just doing one of those Metcon Mania programs and you're not getting the results that you know you need and you're still waking up feeling that way, more power to you. You're the wrong kind of client for me and probably for you.
So finally is the customizable program. And these, we firmly believe, obviously, are the, not only are they the best programs, but I feel like in 5 to 10 years, that's all that's going to really be around anymore. Because that's the best way to train for any sport. And you see that in every other professional sport. You see customized plans for every athlete, right? And not only that, you see a team of experts around every athlete. So I always use the example of a professional quarterback, but if you've been listening to this for any amount of time, I'll use a different approach. I think this one's even more applicable. Let's look at a decathlete. A decathlete has to learn how to throw. They need to learn how to sprint. They need to learn how to run distance. They need to learn a ton of different skills on the field and in the track. There is not one coach that's going to be the expert in training you for all of these, right? So a decathlete, a professional decathlete, even a high school or college level decathlete, has multiple coaches that specialize in each of the disciplines. So the best programs out there are going to have experts in all of the different areas of sport, of this sport, right? Gymnastics, endurance, weightlifting, movement, injury prevention, nutrition, all of the above.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see how anybody could say that a customized program is not better than anything else. I don't know if I agree with you that in 10 years that's all that's going to be around, because I don't think that everybody in the world cares enough about their fitness to get that kind of a program. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, yeah, I don't know how there could be an argument made that that's not the best way to do it. You know, like when I sit down and talk to somebody who's working with me, oftentimes they'll be like, hey, let me send you a video of my snatch and you can give me some advice on how to clean it up. I'm like, nope, stop right there. And I picture myself sitting at a table with Matt Bruce, Nick Sorrell, Nick Fowler, Chris Hinshaw around me, you know, the brute team. And somebody says to me, hey, can you take a look at my snatch and give me some pointers? Could I? Yeah, sure. I could give you some really low level, like CrossFit coach pointers on how to do a snatch. But if Matt Bruce is sitting at the table, why would I answer that question? Like, why wouldn't I just be like, slide the phone to him? So that's how I operate all the time. If I could slide the question to somebody better suited to answer it, I can just focus on making sure there's nobody better suited to answer the questions that I answer. And that's how I approach it. So I would absolutely recommend anybody looking for the best results in their programming to look for a team of people who can do that for them and who work well with each other. So there's no dick measuring contests.
So how do you think people are actually making the decision to, like, how are people actually choosing their programming?
Oh, whatever they think is cool. I think people are choosing the cool program. Like, it's, you know, who has the coolest apparel? Who has the coolest media message? And, you know, who's got the athletes who they resonate with the most? And I think that to a certain point, it's the program's responsibility. You know, so I would argue that it's Brute's responsibility to not only put out the best program, but to put out the best marketing that is messaging to the person who they want to come on.
Right.
So that if the messaging coming from Brute is, this is the kind of athlete that we want, this is the dream state that we're able to create, then it should attract that person in. I don't think that Brute gets a pass on having to have good marketing. It's just a matter of, that's where the game is played. People are finding their program on the marketing for said program.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, man. I think it's, you know, it all comes down to that social proof. It's the top athletes. It's the one with the most amount of athletes. It's really hard to get around that effect that has on you.
I think that has a big effect, but only for reach. I think that the message, if targeted enough and specific enough, can cut through all of that. Like, right. I think that if there was a program out there for CrossFitters who wanted to become competitive CrossFitters, and the programming company said, hey, we don't work with elite CrossFitters because we're not the best company in the world to work with elite CrossFitters. What we're looking for is to serve the person who wants to go from beginner to novice CrossFitter, or from novice to intermediate. That's the person who we want to work with. We spend our lives in the minutiae. We spend our lives building technique for basic entry-level athletes. We know that you can't handle 2 hours of training per day or 3 hours per day. We know that you don't have the capacity to take the input from all these different coaches. We know that you're developing a skill set and a mindset as we go along. We specialize in helping you. When you become that intermediate athlete, we're going to get you to the best programmer for you so you can become that elite athlete. I think if someone had a message out there like that, they would cut around all of the elite athletes.
I like that. I'm going to cut that out because that's the magic sauce right there. We're going to start using that. I think another big thing, and I hope I'm not beating a dead horse, but I think this is just such a problem that's slow. Like, people are slowly starting to understand this is that long-term approach. People are so set on doing well the next year, and they're just not willing to commit to the long-term process. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? They're not willing to do what it takes to slow it down, to build correct technique, to build aerobic capacity, to build true strength. They want quick results. They want it in 8 weeks. They want to do well in the next open. And if they don't, then they're not successful.
Yeah, I think it comes down to the Ferrari principle. And the Ferrari principle is, they don't look at, would this piece of equipment be too expensive? Will people not buy this car if we put it in? No, we don't really care. We're going to put the best piece of equipment into the car, no matter what it costs, no matter how long it takes for us to get it, no matter what we have to do to get it. If I was looking to become a CrossFit Games athlete, I would ask you, I would say, Mike, I want to sign up with Brute, but I am at least 3 years from even being a regionals athlete. Can I pay you for 3 years up front and get a substantial discount so I'm pot committed and I'm just going to trust the process for 3 years? That's how I would do it. That's what I would want as the athlete. It's scary for companies to put that out there, for you to say, hey, if you want to work with us, it's a 3-year commitment for one-on-one, because a lot of people are going to be afraid to do that. But really, that's what it takes.
Jeff Prejean actually did almost that exact same thing, minus the like pay up front. He said, I forget the exact dates, but probably 2 to 3 years in advance, he was going to turn 40. And he said, and he was still qualifying for regionals at the time. But he said, Mike, I want to, like, my goal is to win the Masters CrossFit Games, and I will do whatever it takes. And so we broke down every single aspect of his game, and he qualified. And this dude is like 6'2", 6'3", the worst possible body type for CrossFit. Yeah. You know, it was just so hard for him to even make it out of the open to begin with. And that very first year, he went and got third place at the games. Mm-hmm. Huge win. And it's because of that long-term commitment to his development.
Well, the long-term mindset can yield short-term results. You know, it's, if you're working with WAG, you're looking to lose weight, and you're like, I signed up for the year, then you don't worry about what the scale says every month. Your stress is lower. You're trusting a process. You're chasing a stimulus. And in 4 months, you look at the scale and you're like, oh, wow, this is working, because you didn't stress about it every single week and start going off of the plan because it wasn't working fast enough. You knew you had a year.
Right. Yeah, that's huge. Consistency is huge and can get you results faster than you can even imagine.
Yep.
So you've worked with an enormous amount of the top level athletes like Froning, Sarah Sigmund's daughter, Camille, Brooke Wells, and you've seen the way that all of them train. The ones that are staying the healthiest that you work with, what does their training look like in relation to what we've been talking about?
That's a really hard question, because as much as I love all of those athletes and all of the athletes that I work with, I don't necessarily recommend what all of them are doing for most people. And I don't believe that, how do I word this professionally? They're not worried about staying healthy as much as you are. They're worried about competing at a high level. And sports are inherently unhealthy. Nobody plays football to get in shape, but you have to be in shape to play football. So CrossFit's no different. You know, that's why we started. But the people who compete at the highest level, like Rich doesn't do CrossFit to stay in shape. Rich does CrossFit to dominate men.
To eat babies' faces off.
Yeah, like that's why he does it, you know? So the thing that they're doing to stay healthy, to be able to compete every year, I can only speak for the ones who we still work with, and it's being open with the idea that they might have to pivot off of what they're currently doing to stay where they're at. You know, it's, hey, Sean, I'm feeling a little bit of this. What do? We're going to shut down this movement for the next 4 weeks because it's driving you symptoms. We're going to put this in its place. And when we get back to where we need to be, we're going to build load back again. So it's an 8-week process. And they're like, cool, got it. Let's do it.
Love it. So I have this belief, and it sounds like you may disagree with it, but it's that staying healthy is a competitive advantage.
No, I don't disagree with that at all. I think that even the most elite athletes who I work with, who are winning and who are doing the top level of stuff, they're not necessarily performing at the absolute best that they could. They're performing at the absolute best that we can agree they're willing to be at. You know, there's with any person, there's a level of human there where it's, I can't go that far to the left. I got to stay closer to the middle, you know, like for them.
Right.
And that's fine. Like the best thing in the world for Rich Froning, for example, would be to allow himself to deload for 6 months. You know, that's a really hard thing to do. It's not just a hard thing to do physically. It's a hard thing to do mentally. And if he did that, how valuable would he be to his team? Because that's a 2-year process.
Right.
So it's about, you know, balancing what they want with what they need and helping them get the closest to both.
Love it, man. So guys, we're going to wrap it up here in a second. I want to leave you with a couple things. First, you can, like one thing we didn't mention is that all of the different types of programs that we mentioned, there are certain people that might be the perfect program for. And so in the guide, we kind of give a couple examples of who might, like what type of person might fit those different types of training programs. Now, as you're researching, as you're comparing different companies, I highly recommend you ask a handful of questions, either to yourself or by reaching out to that company to make your own assessment. Number one is determine what type of training method category they fall under. So look at the guide, look at the ones that we laid out, and try to determine which type of program that actually is, because that's going to help you inform that decision. Number two, do they test you first to gather information about you as an athlete and determine your strengths and weaknesses? So are they doing any form of assessment? Are they looking at what your weaknesses are? Because if they're not, then you know they are not one of those comprehensive, customizable training programs. And if that's something that you really want, then it helps you to identify that up front. Number three, and I think this is one of the most important, what is the gymnastics program based on, if they have one at all? And is it a one size fits all, or is it something that's progressive in nature? I think gymnastics in the sport of fitness is obviously the most technical part of the sport, but it just takes something that's progressive in nature, that you can kind of go at your own pace so that you can basically reach your full potential, for lack of a better term. Number four is, what kind of endurance work do they use? Are they using EMOMs and all out efforts constantly, or do they use lactate threshold training, interval training, and give you some kind of personalized paces? Doing EMOMs and all out efforts can get you fit to a certain point, but to really reach your full potential, you need something personalized for you. Sean, do you have anything to add? Anything that I didn't ask that I should have?
Well, first of all, you left out the most important thing that Brute incorporates. I mean, come on, man. Does your company, or does the company you're looking to work with, intentionally drive recovery to you?
Right.
How do they do that? You know, if you're looking to work with a coach, one of the questions I would ask is, what does your recovery programming look like? And they're like, what? Then they're literally missing the cheese on the pizza. You know, and maybe you like pizza without cheese, but you know, it's the point is, like, that's what holds everything together. If you can't recover, you can't perform. So I think that's an extremely important question to be asking companies who you're looking to work with, is what does your recovery programming look like? Because I think most people out there are thinking of recovery as a day off. And that's sometimes what it is, but that's not always what it is. You know, right. I look at recovery as active and a day off as rest. That's passive. So they're different. That's one of the things I would recommend. The other thing I would recommend is, look at your friends who are doing a program or on a programming company's program or are working with a coach, and ask them how they feel. Don't ask them how their performance is going. Ask them how they physically feel. Are you in pain in the morning? Do you have to warm up for 30 minutes? Is everybody who you know on this program as sore as you? Why is everybody who's doing this wearing a back belt when they overhead squat 95 pounds? Those are the things that I think you need to look for, because the goal is not to train hard for a year. The goal is to train hard until the day you die. And training hard doesn't necessarily mean going hard every day.
I love it. Yeah, recovery and mindset are two things, like two of the most overused terms in this space. Everybody says you need to focus on recovery. You need to focus on recovery. You need to focus on mindset. And that's where the dollar ends, right? Like, no one is teaching how to do that. No one is creating the time and the space to do that. And I couldn't agree more. That is so important to athletic development.
I mean, yeah, what mindset is huge, and you're right. Everybody just says the word. It's like a Google keyword for people. Mindset. Let's throw it on the website. Make sure if people are searching for it, they find us. Well, what do you do for it? Nothing. I don't know. We just tell them to be tough, rub a little dirt on it. You know, like, one of the things that we're adding to our service is a Zoom call every month with me, where people get the opportunity to ask questions, and I'm going to talk to them about developing the professional mindset, whether they're a novice athlete or a professional. But Yeah, I know that you guys do that at Brute. I see how you do it, not only in conversation with athletes, but in the program. Like when you program 50 ring swings for somebody and no muscle ups, that's mindset work. Because people don't want to do 50 ring swings and not do a muscle up.
No doubt.
They want to do the fun stuff. And they're going to write their check-in to their coach. And George Sanchez or Adrian is going to respond to that and be like, yeah, man, you want to be great. That's the kind of stuff it's going to take. You have to enjoy that kind of mundane work and aim to be the best at it. And that is mindset built into fitness. And it's fitness as a proxy to make better people. And that's what I enjoy being Brute. That's what I enjoy about being a part of Brute.
Boom. Guys, you can find that guide at brutestrengthtraining.com/pick-your-program. Like I said, we go into a lot more depth into all of these topics. Check it out. Sean, you're the fucking man. Where can people keep up with you?
People can find me at ActiveLifeRx on Instagram or at Sean Pastuch on Instagram. That's SEANP like Peter, AST like Tom, UCH. And
done that before.
I have done that. Every time I order Chinese food, I have to do that.
Nice.
At least when I'm going to get a table. But we're moving everything to ActiveLifeRx.com too. So in the next few months, you'll be able to find us there.
Hell yeah. Thank you so much, Sean.
My pleasure.
Shit, I can't believe I forgot recovery.
I got you.
What a diss.
I got you.
Appreciate it, dude. I was definitely not on time on that.
That's right. I texted Fowler. I was like, nice. Hey, I'm running late, but it's Mike's fault. Take it up with him.
Perfect, dude. Hit on it, appreciate it, dude.
No problem. That was good.
Talk to you soon, man.
See ya.
This episode is finished, but your training journey continues. Head over to brutestrengthtraining.com/SSW and grab your free pack of 32 accessory workouts that you can incorporate into your training and start improving your strength immediately. That's brutestrengthtraining.com/SSW.